Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session today, you may press star one to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'll turn the call to Mr. Tom Skinner. You may begin, sir.
Thank you, Shirley, and thank you for joining us today for this update on H1N1 in the United States. It's been quite a while since we last briefed you on H1N1, and H1N1 has not gone away. In fact, some states like Georgia and others in the Southeast are continuing to see regional activity. Joining us today to help put this all into perspective for us is the U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Regina Benjamin, and Dr. Ann Schuchat, Director of the CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Both are going to provide some very brief remarks, and then we'll open it up to your questions. So, Dr. Benjamin, please go ahead.
Thank you all for joining us today to talk about the continued importance of getting vaccinated for H1N1 influenza. It is a pleasure to be on the call and to have an opportunity to speak with you. I'm joined by Assistant U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Ann Schuchat from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And as you guys know, Dr. Schuchat has done an outstanding job communicating vital H1N1 information during this global pandemic. As a physician, I've treated many patients during the various flu season, and I know the importance of educating the public and in keeping them informed on ways to prevent disease. And so as Surgeon General, I'm asking for your help to educate the American people about why they still need to get the vaccine. The flu season is not over yet. The H1N1 flu has already made 2009-2010 flu season one of the most challenging in recent memory. The H1N1 has remained persistent in the Southeast, and now those states are experiencing more local and regional activity. Remember, vaccination is the single best protection against H1N1. Approximately 60 million Americans have been infected, and there's been 265,000 hospitalizations. But more importantly, in the United States, close to 12,000 people have died from H1N1. We're at a critical moment in our national response to this virus, and we need to continue to urge Americans to get vaccinated, especially people at high risk for complications from H1N1. There still seems to be a lot of misinformation out there. We're seeing higher rates of disease in adults who have chronic conditions like diabetes, cancer, heart disease, asthma, COPD, and other lung illnesses. And just last week, our nation's supply of H1N1 vaccine reached 124 million doses. But many Americans are still vulnerable to the H1N1 because they haven't gotten vaccinated yet. With more vaccine available, all Americans can now get immunized. So we're encouraging people to take advantage of the increased supply to protect themselves and to protect their loved ones. Lastly, we need to get the vaccination message out to minority groups. They're not participating in the national vaccination program at the rate of other population groups are. It's especially important to remind minority groups to get the H1N1 vaccine because we know that minorities experience higher rates of these chronic diseases that I mentioned earlier, you know, the diabetes, the cancer, heart disease, et cetera. The H1N1 response continues to be an incredible effort by state and local officials, manufacturers, scientists, healthcare workers, and you, the media. So we appreciate your help in reminding Americans that vaccination is the best protection against getting the flu. The H1N1 vaccine is very safe, it's effective, and it prevents death. Thank you for your work, for being factual, reliable, and helpful in getting information to your audiences. And as America's doctor, I look forward to working with you to keep our communities healthy and safe. So I'll now turn it over to Dr. Ann Schuchat.
Thanks so much, Dr. Benjamin, and good afternoon, everybody. My key message this afternoon is that we are continuing to see people with serious illness from the pandemic H1N1 virus, especially in some of the southeastern states, and vaccination is the best way to protect yourself or those you love from further illness or death. I'm going to provide a really brief national update and then focus on some worrisome trends we're seeing in the Southeast that suggest to us that it's still important for people to seek out vaccination. Today I'm not going to be giving an update about vaccine use or coverage, but I do want to let you know that we're expecting to release updated information on coverage in the relatively near future. Although disease rates are now much lower on average around the country than they were last fall, the H1N1 virus is still circulating, and people continue to become ill and be hospitalized and die from this virus. H1N1 has been causing more disease recently in the Southeast, where several states are reporting either regional or local activity. Three states are reporting regional activity, Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. Local activity is reported in Puerto Rico and eight states, mostly in the Southeast: Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, as well as in further western states like Hawaii and New Mexico. The activity we see in CDC's influenza surveillance is consistent with regional flu activity at college campuses in the Southeast that was reported by the American College Health Association. Nearly all of the influenza viruses circulating are the H1N1 pandemic virus. We've not seen seasonal flu in substantial numbers at all, even into this week, in late March. Now I just want to briefly turn to the situation in Georgia, where things appear to be different. For the past several weeks, the Georgia Department of Community Health has reported an increase in flu-related hospitalizations. On March 5th, Georgia requested a team from CDC come to help them with a more in-depth investigation, and our staff has been working closely with Georgia public health officials to analyze flu cases, hospitalizations, and deaths that were reported recently during these winter months and compare them to previous flu activity reported during the summer and fall 2009 H1N1 experience to sort out what might be contributing to the recent increase in flu activity in Georgia. Recently, Georgia has seen more laboratory-confirmed influenza hospitalizations each week than they have seen at any time since October. The data suggests that the increase in hospitalizations are caused by the H1N1 strain, not by other seasonal influenza viruses. And we don't have any evidence at this time that the H1N1 virus has changed in Georgia. It's the same as what we were seeing in earlier months. Most of the hospitalizations that they've seen have occurred in adults with underlying conditions that put them at higher risk of severe influenza. The findings we have so far suggest the value of vaccination, particularly among adults with chronic illnesses or advanced age who are more likely to become severely ill if they encounter the H1N1 virus. Well, now the good news is that there's plenty of vaccine available. Vaccines widely available across the United States at doctors' offices, health departments, and pharmacies. So even if you put off being vaccinated until now, vaccination with the H1N1 influenza vaccine is still beneficial. Now, particularly in the southeastern states where H1N1 is circulating intensively, we think that it's important for people to take advantage of the vaccine. And CDC strongly urges people with underlying health conditions and those over 65 to get vaccinated. The vaccine supplies are plentiful, and the circulating virus still closely matches the one in the vaccine. We have an excellent safety record now for this H1N1 vaccine. Now, as we've said many, many times, with influenza, the future is hard to predict. There is much we do not know about why the virus remains more active in some parts of the country and not yet in others. But we do know that the virus is still around and vaccine is very safe. And vaccination is the best way to protect yourself or your loved ones from flu. So I think both Dr. Benjamin and I will be happy to answer questions that the media may have.
Shirley, I think we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And one moment for our first question. And our first question comes from Marion Falco with CNN. Please ask your question.
Thank you, Dr. Benjamin and Dr. Shukat. I have a couple questions. Number one, it seems kind of out of the blue to have this, we haven't heard about H1N1 in a while. Is it really these Georgia and Southeast states that have raised the level to bring you on the phone? And also, someone might be skeptical and say, well, normally you tell us 36,000 people die in an average flu season. We've only had 12,000 deaths. So this sounds like a pretty good year. And I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'm just curious. So how would you answer that question?
I'll let you handle it, Ann.
Yes, this is Dr. Shukat. Let me answer both of those questions. The situation in Georgia is the critical reason that we called the media briefing. Seeing an increase in cases again in Georgia is unusual, and we did want to spotlight that. Does that mean we're going to see that in other states? I really don't know. A couple of the southeastern states are seeing more activity right now than the rest of the country. So that's the thing that's new today that we really wanted to talk about. I also want to speak about the deaths, and I think it's very important to put in contrast what we've seen so far this year with the 2009 H1N1 pandemic virus and what we typically will see in a seasonal influenza. When we say that about 12,000 people have died from this virus, that estimate includes 90% of those people, about 11,000, are people under 65, and that's much more deaths in a particular year among younger people than what we typically see with seasonal flu. We estimate that the rate of deaths in young people is probably five times higher than what we would typically see with seasonal influenza. Now, the very good news is that the elderly, while not completely immune, have been relatively spared. And the number of deaths we've estimated in the elderly this past year from the H1N1 virus is much lower than what we typically will see with seasonal influenza. But so we do think that there's been a shift to younger people in terms of serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths, and that does make this different. Of course, we think it's important to prevent seasonal influenza as well, and we recommend vaccines against both every year. This year, though, we had this new virus to contend with.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Steve Sternberger with USA Today. You may ask your question.
Thank you very much. I was wondering, Dr. Shukat, whether there are any geographical trends. Is there any clustering of in Georgia? What have you seen on college campuses? Are there any factors that give any sort of clues as to how the virus is circulating in the groups that are getting it?
The preliminary information is that the hospitalizations are occurring in adults, not in young children, and that they're occurring in people with chronic health conditions. There does seem to be some geographic difference in areas that are having a lot of hospitalizations now compared with areas that were harder hit last summer. Late summer was when Georgia had their increase in disease, but that's preliminary, and there'll be a full analysis that will be forthcoming in the future. We wanted to talk about the Georgia situation before the investigation was complete because we thought it was important for people to be able to take action. But our preliminary information is that the geography may be a little bit different than what they saw in summer and early fall.
Can you say anything about what the geography may be?
No, just that the patterns are somewhat different. So this is, you know, preliminary, and that's about all I know right now.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Question, sure. Please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Daniel Danone with WebMD. You may ask your question.
Thanks. I'm with WebMD. Dr. Shukat, I'm just looking for a little more information on what you're finding in Georgia. I know this is preliminary. Do you have any sense of the demographics? Are there different populations being hit in different cities in the summer, or is this the same places where we've seen it but a different demographic? Can you give us any details you can on this Georgia situation that made you make this call?
Yeah, the demographic is adults, which the hospitalizations are in general in adults, which is relatively similar to what they saw last summer and fall in terms of hospitalizations. The numbers are that they've had more than 40 hospitalizations this past week, and for the third week in a row, Georgia had more hospitalizations than any other state in the country from laboratory-confirmed H1N1 influenza, so not necessarily all the syndromic influenza-like illness, but the laboratory-confirmed flu cases. I don't have information about the specifics of race and gender, so that's all I have right now.
And just to reiterate, is there any sense that this is happening in the same communities where we've seen it before, or are these different communities that were relatively spared in the previous wave, if you will?
Well, there's a sprinkling around the state, there may be a shift in terms of the communities. It's a little the data are preliminary because of so I haven't got the all the fine data. Of course, the Georgia Department of Community Medicine would also be available to answer questions if people have them. But I think our key point isn't that we finished all of the I-dotting and T-crossing, but that there's enough illness down here that appears to be preventable that we wanted to put get the word out to people.
Thank you.
Shirley, next question, please.
Thank you. Next question comes from Richard Knox with National Public Radio. You may ask your question.
Hi, thanks. I was going to ask some of the questions that Steve and Daniel have asked. Do you have any sense, in addition, whether there's these hospitalizations are as severe as you'd seen? Are a lot of people on respirators, and are they the same kinds of pattern of illness you've seen before?
The clinical pattern of illness seems to be the same. The vast majority of patients whose records have been reviewed so far were not vaccinated, and so that's, of course, something that couldn't have been looked at last summer or early fall with the cases. So what we're seeing now is cases that are severe enough to require hospitalizations occurring in people for whom there are indications for vaccine. They have underlying conditions like diabetes and heart disease, but unfortunately they hadn't taken advantage of the vaccine yet.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Next question comes from Mike Stobie with the Associated Press. You may ask your question.
Hi, doctors. Thanks for taking the question. One is sort of a follow to the previous one. Dr. Shukat, you said that most of them, can you give me numbers or percentages of those that got sick? How many, what percentage were vaccinated and which weren't? And does that mean we're looking at pockets of susceptibility or pockets of unexposed? And I had an initial question just to make sure. Are there any other states that are showing increased hospitalizations from swine flu recently?
The southeastern states are seeing more. There are three southeastern states that are reporting regional disease, which is one step below widespread disease. The hospitalization information for Georgia appears to be unique. It may be the most complete information we have available right now because it's based on laboratory testing, and that's not necessarily done everywhere. In terms of pockets of immunity, we do think that there are geographic differences in the proportion of people that are already immune to this virus. You can become immune either by getting sick from the virus or by being vaccinated. And we know that there are geographical differences in vaccination right now. And, of course, there were differences in when communities were hit by the virus last summer or fall. It could be that the southeastern states were hit relatively early in the late summer and early fall. And it could be that their coverage will be a bit lower than in some of the other parts of the country because the vaccine came after they had a lot of disease and demand might not have been as high. So it's possible those two factors contribute to perhaps more vulnerability in this part of the in the southeastern part of the country. But it's way too early for us to say that we're not going to see increases in other places. And I do think it's important for people to know that being vaccinated is a safe and effective way to reduce your chances of ending up in the hospital with flu that could have been prevented.
Doctor, was the vaccination rate lower in Georgia?
We're going to be releasing quite a bit more information, but Georgia was among the lower states. That's right.
Shirley, we'll take two, maybe three more questions, please.
Okay, thank you. Our next question comes from Rob Stein with Washington Post. You may ask your question.
Oh, hi. Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, as you just mentioned that Georgia is one of the first states to see an increase in activity, so I'm wondering, do you have concerns that this could be the beginning of another wave of infection across the country?
You know, of course I can't say whether we're going to have another wave of infection, but I'm actually worried about a different possibility. I'm just worried that additional cases will be happening day in and day out in people who thought there was no risk anymore. So less concerned about a big outbreak or a big spike of illness, I'm concerned about the people who will suffer needlessly because there is vaccine available, and people, particularly ones with diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and pregnancy, really ought to take advantage of the vaccine.
Thank you.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Next question comes from Michael Smith with MidPage Today. You may ask your question.
Hey, this is also for Dr. Shuckitz. I still want a little more data on the Georgia stuff. You said 40 hospitalizations in the past week. I'm wondering, and then 3 weeks in which they had more hospitalizations than anywhere else, any other state. Two things. Those are absolute numbers, not rates, I assume. And secondly, can you quantify the previous couple of weeks? Are they continuing to go up?
The past several weeks, they've had more hospitalizations than they had been seeing really since early October. And so these are not rates, they're just absolute numbers. And remember that they require an influenza test to be performed, and we know that many hospitalizations occur without that. So they're really just a surrogate for the amount of illness that's around. So basically, the situation in Georgia is that from mid-February to now, they've seen an increase and a persistence of these higher numbers of hospitalizations each week that are laboratory confirmed to be from influenza, with the additional testing suggesting it's the H1N1 not seasonal strains that are suddenly appearing. We really aren't seeing seasonal strains around the country yet, and perhaps we won't actually have them.
Shirley, let's make this the last question, please.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Stacey Singer with Palm Beach Post. You may ask your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I see that H1N1 is in the recommended shots for next year from the World Health Organization. I'm wondering if this year's, if you get your H1N1 shot this year, can you presume that you're protected next year from H1N1?
The critical thing is that the U.S. vaccine supply in the fall will be a trivalent vaccine. It will include the pandemic H1N1 vaccine strain, but also a influenza B strain and an influenza A H3N2 strain. There are three different influenza viruses that the vaccine will protect against. So we think it's important for people to reduce their risk of flu next year by getting the trivalent vaccine. And getting vaccinated now, the critical role of that is to protect you in the months ahead. We really don't know whether this H1N1 is going to continue to circulate during the summer the way that it did last year. We don't know whether international travel, people coming back from the southern hemisphere, where we expect that there'll be a lot of H1N1 disease in their winter season, which is our summer. Really, right now, we're recommending vaccine to protect people over the several months ahead until the new trivalent vaccine becomes available and people can protect themselves against three different kinds of flu at that point.
This concludes our briefing. Thank you for joining us. If you have any additional requests for information, you can call the main CDC press office at 404-639-3286, and we'll be happy to help you out. There will also be a transcript from this briefing posted to the CDC Division of Media Relations website, hopefully within a few hours. So thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.